This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's the evening edition. I'm Ezra Zayed, and if you haven't noticed it, we're in by-election season. Two constituencies are being contested this coming weekend, this Saturday, June 18th. And those two constituencies in question are Sungai Besar, here in Selangor, as well as Kuala Kangsar in Perak. By-elections take place to fill elected offices that have become vacant between general elections. And usually a by-election occurs when the incumbent has died or resigned. Recently, on the 5th of May, the Member of Parliament for Sungai Besar, Noria Kasnun, who was also the Plantation Industries and Commodities Deputy Minister, she, along with Wan Muhammad Khairil Anwar Wan Ahmad, the MP of Kuala Kangsar, they both died in a helicopter crash in Sarawak. The tragedy took place en route from Betong to Kuching during campaigning for the recent Sarawak state election. Both of them were MPs for the Barisan Nasional Coalition. Now, while these by-elections may very well be a precursor to the 14th general election, we're going to find out what's at stake for the respective candidates and parties involved. And to give us a primer, the 101 on these by-elections, on the line with us is Ben Sufian, independent pollster from Merdeka Centre. Ben, thanks for being with us. And as I mentioned, these by-elections are being held on the back of this terrible helicopter tragedy in Sarawak. And to begin, how much of an impact will that have on voters as they head to the polls?
I think certainly in the wake of a tragedy such as this, I think voters, for the most part, are likely going to have some sympathy towards the previous MPs, particularly so in a situation where some members of their family are contesting or potentially also campaigning for the new candidates that are running in these two places.
Right. And for the man on the street right now, there's so much going on in the political arena. And only recently we saw the conclusion of the Sarawak state election that went in the direction of the BN ruling coalition. Will these two by-elections actually give us a stronger hint about the political climate moving forward?
Well, I think these two by-elections can be considered a bellwether of Malaysian political inclinations right now, particularly as it reflects upon voters in Peninsular Malaysia. The reason is because these two seats were, has been vacated following the deaths of their respective MPs, constitute a typical marginal seat, or seats that are very contested between the opposition and the ruling party. And there are many of such seats. About 25% of the seats in parliament are contested, meaning it's won or lost by the ruling party on very, very narrow margins of less than 5% of the popular vote. So Kuala Kangsar and Sungai Besar are two of such seats.
Now, let's talk about these specific seats, and let's begin with Sungai Besar and its constituency. In the 2013 general election, the late Noria Kasnun narrowly won with 18,695 votes, only about 399 more than Muhammad Saleh M. Hussein of PAS. What can you tell us about this constituency?
Well, Sungai Besar constituency has about 43,000 voters, roughly, and it's a primarily rural part of Selangor. It is basically bisected by the coastal road, and on one side you have paddy fields from Skinchan running all the way north to the town of Sungai Besar itself. So it is a predominantly rural population, and on the coastline we have some fishermen that's doing inshore fishing. So it's a fairly rural part of Selangor, I would say. Only a few parts of Selangor that's left to be rural, and Sungai Besar is one of them. But I think what's interesting about the seat is that although rural as it is, it's only about an hour and a half drive from Kuala Lumpur and the rest of the Klang Valley. So many of the children of the voters who live here actually work in the services as well as the manufacturing centres in the Klang Valley, and either commute or live in towns like Shah Alam, Bani, KL.
And what would you say are some of the issues that matter to them?
Well, in Sungai Besar, I think the fundamental issues are typical for rural areas that have seen the big city. Basically, voters there want improved amenities, and when we talk to people there, they want their roads to be better paved, and they want Wi-Fi, they want free Wi-Fi or better cell phone coverage so that they can get 3G or 4G. And this is largely because most people there are already on the internet, And this is because many of them are actually, you know, economically quite okay in a sense, not living in hardship, but, you know, lower middle class or middle class in terms of income levels. The second thing, I think they want to see better quality infrastructure. There's been the proposed or planned West Coast Expressway running from Banting all the way up to Taiping. And the voters there are keen to see that project get a move on, because that is going to reduce the transportation time from Sungai Besar to Klang Valley.
All right. Now, after this, we'll take a quick look at the Kuala Kangsar constituency and what's at stake for them. Folks, if you've just joined us, we're analysing the two by-elections taking place this coming weekend. I'm speaking to Ben Sufian, independent pollster from Merdeka Centre. More after this on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Building fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to the Evening Edition. I'm Ezra Zaid. And this evening, we're going to try and make sense of the two by-elections happening this Saturday, June 18th, both in Sungai Besar in Selangor, as well as Kuala Kangsar in Perak. Now, earlier, we got a hint at the makeup of the electorate in Sungai Besar. Now, let's take a look at Kuala Kangsar. On the line with us is Ben Sufian, independent pollster for Merdeka Centre. Now, Ben, for Kuala Kangsar, it's a royal town that has seen rapid development over the years, and it's a constituency that is also familiar with having female leaders, most notably Tan Sri Rafidah Aziz. What can you tell us about the makeup of this constituency?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Kuala Kangsar has about 35,000 voters. You know, they are predominantly split between those working in the commercial centres in the city, as well as those working in the public sector, and a little bit of rural voters there as well. Although in terms of activities, you have some small plantations, orchards of that sort in Kuala Kangsar, slightly different kind of makeup in terms of agricultural land use. But there is a number of small factories, light industry in the area, as you said. It's grown significantly over the last two decades. And it's increasingly connected to to Ipoh and by the North South Expressway. So, like Sungai Besar, Kuala Kangsar to some extent is filled up with voters who are slightly older than the national average, largely because their offspring has moved off to the cities to work. And that lends a slightly slower feel to the place. In terms of demographic makeup, both constituencies are fairly similar. They have about 67-65% ethnic Malay voters, and the rest are made up of ethnic Chinese, about a quarter, and 2-5% Indian voters. And it makes these seats very contestable because of the very polarized political sentiments expressed along ethnic lines in Kuala Kangsar, likewise in Sungai Besar as well.
And in Kuala Kangsar, I'm curious about how the sympathy vote will manifest itself. The BN candidate is Mastura Muhammad Yazid. She stepped up to the fore in light of her husband's death, Wan Muhammad Khairil Anwar Wan Ahmad, who was the former MP. How big of a factor is that?
Well, I think it's like this. For people, when I say the sympathy factor in election, I think that largely comes from voters that are already with the party where the disease comes from. So I think that increases the likelihood for them to turn out to vote. That increases the mobilization within the party to show sympathy and show togetherness in support of the replacement candidate. And I think in the case of Kuala Kangsar, the widow of the deceased MP is running. So she's going to be the BN candidate for that area. So we expect that there is going to be some improved level of support, largely because she comes from there. The family of the late MP is also from Kuala Kangsar town, so potentially family, friends and relatives and so on are likely going to show up to show support. But be that as it may, I think if we look at elections are about larger numbers. So while the specific trend in small segments of the population may be sympathetic, the rest of the population will be affected by broader trends of things that are happening at a national or state or even local levels.
Now, in light of these two upcoming by-elections, we're factoring in the recently concluded Sarawak state elections. We've been distracted by so many issues, both at the federal and state level. All of this notwithstanding the international attention that is thrusted upon the country in relation to the 1MDB scandal, how do voters prioritise what issues matter to them against this colourful backdrop?
Well, I think if we look at previous by-elections in the past, as well as looking at broader general election trends, I think we can discover two things. Number one, whatever happens at national level tends to flow through all the way down to local levels. Meaning if people are unhappy about economic conditions, cost of living or inflation and things of that sort, you're going to see a change, a shift in public sentiments, even at local level, because it affects everybody broadly. And that cannot be pinned down to one single person or anything like that. But it's a broad sentiment that we can see affecting the incumbents in a particular electoral context, whether national or even by elections like what we're experiencing right now. And then we may have local factors that would be at play. I think in the kind of in these two by elections that we're seeing, there definitely is an interplay of national issues in the form of cost of living factors rising after the last couple of years when government has rolled back subsidies and introduced GST. And then second, you have a perceptible but not so prominent effect arising from controversial issues such as 1MDB. So you have those two things figuring out. Largely because when political parties campaign, they bring these issues to the fore and it gets digested by voters, and then they decide whether to accept or reject it as something that can mobilize their vote, whether to continue voting the same way or to switch. That's one factor. The second factor, I think, is more local, and that denotes the nature of the candidates or the political parties that are contesting. And I think it's here where, in this particular by-election, we are seeing, I would say for the first time, an interesting shift in the dynamics of Malaysian politics, where I would say in the last 10, 12 years or so, we've seen the opposition largely being able to conclude an electoral pact where they ensure only one candidate contesting against the ruling party. Now the pact is broken and the opposition vote is likely going to be fragmented.
I'd like to now focus on the dynamics of the political packs and factions, as well as the contesting parties and candidates. And in Sungai Besar, for example, we have the traditional BN and PAS candidates, but also this time around, the new kid on the block, Amanah, they've put forth Azhar Abdul Syukur. What can you tell us about these competing candidates and why they've been chosen to represent their parties?
In BN's side, you know, the Adun or Sungai Panjang, YB Budiman has been selected. I mean, based on our conversations with local voters down there, he is quite well spoken for. I think very well liked by voters across the board, and largely because he is a very humble and very accessible state assemblyman. And I think that's one reason why I think he was chosen ahead of others. The other candidates coming in from PAS, Dr. Rani, who's currently the state assemblyman of Meru, is also a very well-regarded, very grounded state assemblyman, but he's not from there. So there is a slight, I would say, discount, partly because he's not a local man. The other candidate coming in from Parti Amanah, Azhar, is son of, I think, the first MP of one of the earlier MPs of that area. Not as well known, but pretty successful from business, from what we are told. And I think he's struggling to make himself known to the local public, largely because, you know, he comes from a new party that's not very well known. And I think that plays into the dynamics, because what we're seeing is that most voters vote along known party brands, whether you are with PAS or with UMNO or Barisan Nasional. And having a new party on the block, I think, I would say confuses, but less is known about the party. And so a lot of time has to be spent to explain who the party is, what is it about, who is it allied with. And I think it's going to make it quite a tough sell for Amanah in this by-election.
And actually, on that note, given that these candidates are relatively unknown to the constituents of Sungai Besar, will it have an impact on voter turnout?
Well, yes and no. First of all, since the candidates are a local individual coming in from within the region, within the area, no big names, no big political names have thrown their hat in the ring, then I think we are going to see a much more localized affair in terms of the impact each candidate would have in mobilizing voters. But I think the bigger factor influencing voter turnout is, I would say, largely voter fatigue that has set in since 2013. We are, I think, anticipating turnout to be anywhere between 15% to 20% less than the 2013 general elections. And that's likely going to impact the result significantly. And I think the reason for the impact, or rather the voter fatigue, it comes largely from the feeling that there's been a lot of politicking, but not much ground gain with respect to the opposition or that of the BN. Things have largely been stagnant.
Now, I think what a lot of observers are curious about is that given the split in the Islamic political party, PAS, that has resulted in some members staying while others opting to join Amanah, which has in fact aligned itself to this new look Pakatan Harapan coalition, will this give us an idea to the viability of PAS, Amanah, and to a large degree UMNO as well, about how these parties will venture forward in the future?
Yeah, I think this is, I would say, the key question coming out from this two by-elections, because in both by-elections you have PAS, Amanah and BN contesting in a three-corner fight. Both constituencies have fairly similar ethnic makeup with some significant differences in terms of the socio-economic conditions of the place. And they're both located in different states, which give us a flavour of how voters, say, in a more urbanised state like Selangor would vote compared to a slightly less urbanised state such as Perak would vote. It gives us a good flavour of how the actual outcome would be. And I think looking at some work that we've done historically and looking at sentiments coming out from voters that we've been talking to over the last couple of weeks, certain things appear to be coming through. Number one, it's very difficult for Amanah to make a breakthrough and regain Malays who are supporting PAS, Malays who are not supporting BN. So if you look at the Malay electorate as a whole, it's split between those who are with the ruling party and those who are not. And Amanah would be forced to share that part of the Malay electorate that's not voting for the ruling party. By the sentiments that we're trying to gauge coming from the area, I think the fraction is going to be fairly small, which calls into some questions about Amanah into the future. I'll get to that in a minute. The second point is how voters along different ethnic lines are mobilized. We find that BN has not been able to make significant headway with the ethnic Chinese. Many of them are still largely opposed to the ruling party, the federal ruling party, and I think are going to likely lend their support to Amanah, largely on the backing and the campaign efforts of the Democratic Action Party, DAP. So I think at the end of the outcome, you're going to see Amanah, capturing the lion's share of the ethnic Chinese and the non-Malay vote, a small fraction of the Malay vote, and PAS is left with maybe of a portion of the Malay vote that's less than UMNO but bigger than Amanah. And in the end, you will have an end result that's very likely going to be a BN victory with a plurality, meaning not an outright majority per se of more than 50% of the vote, but likely less than 50% of the vote, but a victory nonetheless, because the opposition vote has been broken into two parts of potentially equal size. This is going to be indicative of the general elections results that we are going to see going into the future, unless the opposition can find a way to come together and develop a flair for having straight fights again.
And finally, in Sungai Besar, Barisan Nasional has actually branded itself as the underdog in that contest. Could you help elaborate as to why that's the case and how they hope to make an impact by this weekend?
Well, I think they've been seeing themselves as underdog, partly because, Selangor as a state is run by the opposition coalition. So they are ruling party in the state. And Selangor state government is relatively well endowed in terms of economic resources and muscle, and actually have had its presence felt even in Sungai Besar and the rural parts of the state due to various programs and so on. So on a day when the opposition were all together in one coalition, certainly Barisan Nasional would be the underdogs because the opposition's combined strength is potentially larger than that compared to Barisan Nasional. But however, since the opposition has fragmented, that PAS is no longer with Pakatan Harapan, and so Amanah has come in to try to replace PAS. I think Barisan Nasional's position is quite comfortable, actually. It's no longer the underdog, but actually, quietly, I think they hold all the advantage because their support is intact, but that of the opposition is split to ways. And so I think if this is going to be the way moving forward to the general election, we are going to see Barisan Nasional feel a lot safer and the Prime Minister getting a boost from his ability to maintain BN's fighting capability going into the next GE.
All right. And after this, my guest, Ben Sufian from independent pollster Merdeka Centre, will be casting his eye on the Kuala Kangsar by-election. We'll be back after the news on the evening edition. It's BFM 89.9.
Bigotry-free Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to the evening edition. I'm Ezra Zayed, and this evening we're taking a closer look at the two by-election contests happening this Saturday, June 18th. Those two constituencies in question are Sungai Besar here in Selangor, as well as Kuala Kangsar in Perak. And now, earlier we took a look at Sungai Besar and the dynamics of the contest there. Now we'll shine a light on Kuala Kangsar and what's at stake. And to help me do so, we have independent pollster Ben Sufian from the Merdeka Centre to analyse the situation a bit further. Ben, let's move on now to the situation in Kuala Kangsar. And it seems evident, at least, that the advantage is with Barisan Nasional to retain their seat. And also, what do we know about the candidate, Datin Mastura Muhammad Yazid, who is the widow of the former MP?
Well, I think Kuala Kangsar is, in some part, I think, also fairly easy for BN to regain or to capture, largely because the opposition vote has fragmented. Now, BN candidate Datin Mastura is very, very well regarded in the area, although she is the widow of the deceased MP. But she is also a professional in her own right. I think earlier on, in the beginning of the campaign, there's been some question about her ability to campaign, partly because she is still in a mourning period. However, I don't see this as a problem, partly because if you notice the news and the reporting that's been showing Kuala Kangsar, does indicate that a lot of senior BN leaders, the Deputy Prime Minister, Defence Minister Hishamuddin and others have all spent time in the parliamentary district to campaign on behalf of her. And I think other family members have come out in support of her as well. That's one. Number two, I think in terms of BN's strength there, particularly with the Malay electorate, is fairly strong. In the last general election, BN achieved more than 60% of the Malay voters there, and in contestation with PAS in a straight fight. But now that the vote has split three ways, we are going to see an interesting phenomenon in terms of how voters are likely going to vote. BN is still going to keep its lion's share majority of the Malay vote. However, PAS will have to split their share with Amanah. PAS may potentially keep a big share of that, but it will end up being very small. But for the Chinese vote, it's going to potentially go to Amanah and BN, and rather not PAS, partly after the whole idea of tabling this Hudud Bill in Parliament has I think, created an adverse impact, particularly amongst non-Muslim voters in the area. So when we add up all these numbers together, BN potentially will, you know, keep at least one half of the popular vote there, whereas the balance of the vote has to be shared between Amanah and PAS. Again, the same pattern would persist in Kuala Kangsar as it potentially will be in Sungai Besar as well.
And from what we've seen thus far in the media, lots of national issues are making their way on the campaign trail. And with only a few days left to polling day, what are some of the key messages that are coming out from the mouths of these candidates that may swing a few votes their way?
Well, a lot of these national issues are already, I think, priced in terms of how voters are assessing political parties and the candidates. I think candidates can add a significant markup or markdown in terms of how voters' likely voting intentions are going to be. So in the case of candidates that are seen positive or have some sympathy factor like what we've seen, potentially it will be a slight improvement that will dampen the impact of national issues on their party's performance at the local level. But if you look at specifically in terms of the issues that we've mentioned, I think the biggest impact would be the cost of living and GST issues, because that affects very widely and deeply, particularly in constituencies like Sungai Besar and Kuala Kangsar, where most people are not rich. They are, you know, working class or lower middle class of that sort, so people who are working on the budget. So that will be, I think, a bigger factor affecting them rather than other cases like 1MDB, for example, which I think, important as it is, seem to be somewhat remote by voters in these places. I think the third factor is an issue like Hudud. That may allow the galvanization of support for hardcore PAS supporters, but not much more beyond that. So my sense is that issues like Hudud, at the end of the day, and I've said this years back, is not potentially a vote getter, but it's a rallying point for Islamist voters, and likely it allows them to rally around PAS and helps them fend off the challenge by parties like Amanah.
What I do find fascinating about these two by-elections is probably the lack of organization and coherence, be it with the BN Coalition or with Pakatan Harapan. They both look a far cry from being at their best as political organizations who are about to go to battle. How much of that could potentially impact the final result?
I think it affects the opposition more than it does the ruling party, partly because of a couple of reasons. Number one, the ruling party has enormous resources at their disposal in order to mobilize voters. So I think so long as they are able to arrive at a choice of a candidate peaceably, meaning without too much rancor and splits in the party, and I think this has been achieved in both Sungai Besar and Kuala Kangsar, I think for the most part, their supporters can be mobilized to show up on election day and vote for their respective candidates. I think the situation cannot be said for the opposition, because I think at a fundamental level, the opposition, you know, has split up into two blocks, PAS and the others, so-called Pakatan Harapan. And then within Pakatan Harapan itself, there's three parties, the fledgling Amanah, and then DAP, and then PKR. And I think based on the ground reports that we're getting from friends and also activists who are working there, we get a sense that things are not quite together. The messaging is a bit off in some places, resulting in unintended consequences and controversies. So all of this, you know, two steps forward, one step back kind of thing, certainly affects the opposition more than BN, partly because of two things. Number one, the BN's vote bank, their supporters are solid with them, and they have the ability, the machinery to mobilize the support to go out. In addition to that, they also have the access to media and other things that will allow them to deliver their message down there. However, for the opposition, they don't have as much resources, they don't have as much access to media. So a lot depends on the competency of the ground crew, the ground campaigners, the activists who are supposedly campaigning house to house and doing the ceramah rounds and all that. But however, given that this campaign is taking place during the month of Ramadan, that actually puts a crimp on the whole campaign process, because, you know, nearly 70% of the electorate are Muslim. So you can't campaign at night because they're having prayers. You can only start after 10 p.m. and then you have to end at 12. So that only gives you a couple of hours at night. And during the daytime, it's hot and people are too tired to do a proper campaign. So it's only in the non-Muslim area. So in the Chinese areas around Sungai Besar Town and Kinchan and the town of Kuala Kangsar itself, where the sizable numbers of Chinese voters, that campaign efforts like what we are used to house and walkabouts and all that, can be done in earnest. So the lack of the timing as well as the lack of coordination certainly will have an impact. And I think it will be inordinately heavier on the opposition.
Now, before we get to your projections and predictions, Ben, the Election Commission is expecting a voter turnout of about 75%. What do you expect it to be, and how will that be advantageous to the respective parties?
Well, in 2013, voter turnout was at a historical high across the country, and turnout was like I think 88% or 90% amongst the Chinese and Malays respectively in places like Kuala Tangsar and Sungai Besar. So I'm just giving my comments here generally. I think what we're going to see in this particular by-election is I think turnout is going to come down by at least 15%. I estimate that the turnout is going to be between 70 to 75%. I think 75% is quite optimistic. I think it's going to be higher than 70, but not more than 75. And having said that, we are likely going to see more elderly people, older people like me, like those who are 40 and above, likely living and working in the area. They're likely to show up to vote. But younger people, those who are living in the Klang Valley or Ipoh or Penang, what have you, for those in Kuala Kangsar, they're not likely to turn up. So I think we are going to see much lower turnout among younger people, especially those working or living, voting in urban areas of those constituencies, and more of the older people turning out. And this gives an advantage to Barisan Nasional, partly because their electoral support tends to be higher amongst older voters and amongst rural voters. So I think they're going to have an advantage there. So if we were to give a prediction to this election, we are fairly confident in projecting that Barisan Nasional will win the by-election. And I think who's likely going to come out number two and number three largely will depend on the turnout of the Chinese voters. If the turnout of the Chinese voters is higher than 70%, then it is likely that Parti Amanah will be the second rank, or the second highest popular vote. If the turnout is less than 70%, it is likely that PAS will be running at number two in the by-elections in both Sungai Besar and Kuala Tangsar.
And on that note, and I guess in light of your projection that Barisan Nasional should come away with wins in these two by-elections, I'm curious about the net impact on who might be the biggest losers of this contest, because there's more at stake than just being defeated in a by-election at this particular juncture.
I think the biggest loser in the whole contest would be PAS, partly because the emergence of a splinter party in the form of Amanah, as well as the change in policy direction taken by PAS over the past 1 year, I think both factors have added to cause the party to lose significant proportion of the non-Muslim vote. And that has, I think, reduced the ability of this party to actually perform much better in a future general election. You know, PAS potentially, you know, would lose more seats, similar seats in the western part of Malaysia to BN if Amanah were to run rampant and run against them. Amanah itself, you know, we find very unlikely that it is going to be able to gain any seats. As a new party, it seeks to establish itself as a political brand, and potentially it could achieve that. However, it may not be able to win seats on their own unless there is an electoral pact with PAS and Amanah, you know, is allocated seats by its other coalition partners so that they can ensure straight fights in the coming general election. But without straight fights in the general election, I think the clear winners will be Barisan Nasional.
Ben, thanks so much for your time. I know you're headed off to Kuala Kangsar itself to have a closer look at the by-elections. We appreciate your analysis and thanks for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much.
I've been speaking to Ben Sufian, independent pollster from Merdeka Center. In this hour, we've been taking a look at the two by-elections happening in Sungai Besar and Kuala Kangsar. That takes place this coming weekend. If you missed any part of this program, head to bfm.my to download the podcast. Ross Yusuf will be coming in after the 7 o'clock news on Life's a Pitch as he takes a look at all the action from Euro 2016. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.